Welcome to the Seattle Public Library's podcasts of author readings and library events. Library podcasts are brought to you by the Seattle Public Library and Foundation. To learn more about our programs and podcasts, visit our website at www.spl.org. To learn how you can help the Library Foundation support the Seattle Public Library, go to foundation.spl.org.
Hi, everybody. Good evening. I'm Stasha Brandon. I'm the Literature and Humanities Program Manager here at Seattle Public Library. Welcome to the Central Library and to tonight's event with Jessamyn Stanley and Nicole Song. I also wanted to say a special thank you to all of you for being here on such a gorgeous day after so much rain. So thank you so much. I wanted to thank our author series sponsor, Gary Kunis, and the Seattle Times for their generous support for library programs. We're also grateful to the Seattle Public Library Foundation. Private gifts to the foundation from thousands of donors help the library to provide free programs and services that touch the lives of everyone in our community. So let's take a moment to thank all of the wonderful folks who have helped make tonight's event possible. Now let me turn the podium over to Karen Maeda Allman from Elliott Bay Book Company to introduce the rest of the program.
Good evening. Okay, who here follows Jessamyn Stanley on Instagram or Twitter? Yes, yes. And everybody who's not, okay, you know what you got to do after the talk. So thank you so much for coming tonight to hear Jessamyn Stanley speak and meet her in person. She's a yoga teacher and a fat femme. Love it that she owns that. More of us should or could. And also a blogger extraordinaire with over 225,000 followers on Instagram, more after tonight, where she offers readers wisdom on yoga, positive body image, and self-love. And they're beautiful images, and it's just wonderful to open that up and see her smiling face on that Instagram. She's helping us understand that yoga is for all of us, particularly for those of us who, for whatever reason, have thought yoga was not for people like us. And some of us will know kind of intimately about that. And I have to say, we chose this particular venue because we wanted people to feel welcomed and comfortable, and that you're all here and so many different kinds of people, some probably yoga people, probably just interested in yoga or maybe interested in what she's written about and talked about in terms of body image. So that you're all here, I think, is good information for us as to who likes this space and who feels good about the space. So I'm so glad that you're all here. So she's also going to be appearing in conversation with a local luminary, Nicole Song. She's a Seattle-based yoga teacher and journalist, and her column, Fit for Life, has appeared in the Seattle Times Pacific Northwest magazine since 2012. She's also a blogger. She has two books, Yoga for Hikers and Yoga for Climbers, and she's also the president of a nonprofit called Yoga Behind Bars. So we just thought it would be really wonderful to bring the two of them together tonight to have a conversation. So we'll also be asking if you have questions that you'd like to ask after they talk a bit, you'll be invited to do so. And then Jessamyn will be signing her book at the front table. We have copies of Jessamyn's book, Everybody Yoga, at the Elliott Bay Book Company, and also a few copies of Nicole's book as well. So please join me in welcoming Jessamyn Stanley and Nicole Song.
Hi, everybody. It's nice to see you. I'm really, Jessamyn and I have already had a very rich conversation before we got here, and I was like, maybe we should save it for you guys, because it's been really fun to talk to her and to meet her and to get to know her. So how many of you guys have copies of books ready? You brought it here to sign? Oh, good. I'm glad to hear it. And then for those of you who are interested, I wanted to start off by sharing a few things. I read her book, and I'm a yoga teacher, and I love seeing different approaches to the language of yoga. And really, for me, Jessamyn has this approach. It's just so frank. And if you know her well, she's also quite profane. And I've been laughing because in my yoga classes, when people are getting that strained look on their face, I'm like, you should really read Jessamyn Stanley. She says, yoga is fucking hard. And then everyone laughs. And then we're like, oh, okay. And I apologize for the recording on that. Is that okay? All right. Okay, she's explicit. And it's smart, and it's fresh, and it's just, it's there's a space of accessibility. I also think that is really important in the world of yoga. That's in your book, it's in who she is, in her social media, and it's really powerful. I know she's kind of, she's like, oh my gosh, stop talking about me in a nice way. And so I'm going to quote a few things from her book first, just to get us rolling. And really, like, her yoga lessons make me laugh. Like, sun salutations, she compares to yoga cocaine, or caffeine, if you don't want to go down that drug addiction route. I love, she had this one, it's actually a footnote. It says, if you don't consider yourself to be fat, just insert your bullshit body baggage here. It's so true. It's so true. And she also really is a talented writer. If you have, you know, and you probably have experienced that on her Instagram. And even this, and this is her talking about a beauty pageant situation when she was younger. And it said, I remember being introduced to my pageant week roommate and her mother, who managed to evoke the spirit of Mama Rose, but with the Diet Pepsi tartness of Peg Bundy.
You know,
she wants to chime in on this one.
No, well, this is the thing. So, first of all, it's, you know this, it's so hard to read what you've written.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Very much this book was like, I just have to get all of this out. And I had a really amazing editor who does not get enough credit, Maisie Tivnan, and she really was just like trying to allow that to be. But so in my mind, when you're reading that back, I'm like, fuck, man, I was on one when I was writing this. I'm like so glad that I was, because that woman and that other woman, the woman and the girl at the pageant, they were like that. And I think that, and yoga is fucking hard. And I feel like it's really important for people to know that. But I'm also just like, oh, Jessamyn.
Well, I'm going to make her uncomfortable just for a few more moments, quoting one more thing. Because really, when she speaks about yoga, the practice of yoga, it is powerful. Because she speaks from her own voice. And I think it's a really universal experience for anyone who's done yoga, attempted yoga, looked at the yogis on Instagram and wondered if maybe I could do one or two of those poses. Quote, I think that if you have body issues or you've got shit raging in your head about your body shape, size, or condition, particularly as it pertains to yoga, then I do think you can learn a lot from my experience. Because you're totally right. I am fat. I'm not the person you would typically imagine teaching or practicing yoga, or even sitting behind a reception desk in a yoga studio. I know how it feels to be an outsider. When I found yoga, I was completely buried under the melodramatic woes of my life. My practice helps me transcend the all-consuming nonsense of daily life. It allows me to step outside of my mundane fears, endless obsessions, and senseless anger. It's because yoga is not just exercise. It's a life path. And if you allow it, the yogic path will envelop every moment of your life. Every breath, every interaction, every gaze, and every thought. What she's sharing with us is big. It's really big. So I wanted to share that and really just dive into a conversation with you around the book, around yoga practice. I don't know even where to start with this, if that brings up something for you, Jessamyn.
So much is that you've just said, bro, I've just been sitting here like, okay, I just gotta wait. I don't wanna be rude. I just wanna wait until she has like said everything that she wants to say. So when I was listening to that, I was just reminded of how not central to like one kind of body experience this is. Because the more that I do this work, the more that I see practitioners across the world, everyone has the same shit. Like everyone has something. And it's always people that you would never think do, too. I remember when I was in London, like, the front row of the class, there's this dude, this, like, he's, like, an attractive white guy. I don't really pay attention to what they look like, but, like, he could have been in a magazine, you know?
Right.
So, like, but, like, you know. So he was, you know, right up front, and I was like, okay, whatever, you know, chaturangas all day, we're doing this. And then after the class, he came up to me, and he was like, oh my gosh, I just wanted to tell you, like, I feel so much better about myself, and this was such a positive experience for me. And I was like, you got body issues? Like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's amazing to me how much we all tend to, because I feel like people see me and they're like, oh, so fat black girls will like her. You know what I mean? Like, she's the teacher for them. Or okay, all fat girls, that's, you know, whatever. But it's never that
maybe it's just about being honest about where you are today, and that in that honesty, you can allow everyone to be honest with themselves, and that I'm very uncomfortable, like, hearing positive things about all of this, but I think that I'm very grateful that that honesty has brought us to be able to talk about this.
Well, it's one of the things I think that makes you stand out in the world is that you are so honest about conversations that I know personally I have a hard time talking out in a bigger way. Racism, gender, you know, there's a lot of stuff really that you go out there, body positive, body politics, in a way that I think you do things on Instagram that I'm like, I don't know if I could, you know? And I think that for all of us and people who I've been talking to who have been very excited that you're here, who I'm sure are in the audience as well, it's like, it's just amazing and refreshing. And I always wonder if you ever have moments where you're writing these things and then you're like, should I share? Or do I just go, boom, who, you know, I want to know, like, how you think through this stuff.
Oh, all the time, because especially, like, in terms of things that don't seem like yoga, everything is fucking yoga. So, like, there is no thing that we're talking about that is not that. But whenever it's something that, like, maybe people, it's polarizing, so people don't want to talk about it, I definitely will be like, is this something that I feel like getting notifications about all goddamn day, people saying things that they, like, their opinion about whatever it is that I said? Because the reality is that I do not, like, honestly, at this stage, I think that if you put anything on social media, you have to understand that everyone is going to have an opinion about it. And if you can't stand in the truth of it, then you shouldn't be putting it on the internet. And I think that I mean, like, because what's the point? You know, like, I'm not going to sit up here and, like, defend my opinion or, like, try to explain it for somebody else's, like, comfort level. And but the real thing is, like, do I feel like listening to this? And it's always something that, because I do, I'm very interested in the dialogue that it provokes. That to me is like the, ooh, that's why we have this shit, you know? Because what's the point of just putting all this crap up there that's like, it all looks the same? Like, Instagram, in large part, can be really fucking boring to look at because it's just like the same thing over and over again. Like, carefully curated picture, my food here, this yoga here, you know? And I'm just like, what are we saying here? What is the purpose of this? There has to be a reason that for the first time in history, humans across the whole planet can communicate with one another. This has never existed before. So if that's the case, what is the purpose? So that we can all hear one another for once. It's like the Tower of Babel, except on the computer. You know what I mean? Whatever. That metaphor, it seems extrapolated, but later, hear me think about it. Anyway, the point is, I feel like if that's what it is, and we're all talking, and you can say something, you should say something that you at least think is true. And I think that in that, there are a lot of people who have negative pushback. And I think that's awesome, because not everything that is good is happy. And sometimes the good is the negative. And I think that what we all learned in November, regardless of where you sit on the aisle, if there's an aisle, really an aisle, because I think there's a substantial argument that there's not. But I think that you have to see that we're just not communicating with one another. And even if it means that you're going to be fighting, even if it means that people don't like it. And sometimes I will post things because I'm like, ooh, maybe it'll piss people off. And I was actually just thinking recently that maybe I'll start putting pictures of my cat and, like, food and just start putting, like, random shit underneath it and see if people, like, just aren't into it anymore. You know what I mean? Because I feel like there's, well, I could literally sit up here and talk about the ins and outs of my psychology around social media. I'm done. That was, okay. Yeah, I was just going to cut off in the middle of the sentence.
Sure.
Also, since this was, like, my first opportunity to talk, I wanted to say there is a Snapchat filter for this event since we're on the topic of social media. If you use it, it's me doing yoga in my underwear. It's really worth it to just click. So, yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Sounds
that was it.
Great. Awesome. What actually brings us this conversation to, and she and I were speaking about it a little bit, is that it's an interesting conversation that you're broaching in the yoga world, which we're actually, it's reflecting our country's conversation around race. Right, because that actually, yoga itself is a really interesting space, because I feel like you're one of the few teachers out there who is a person of color, who's really, and also leading the charge in that conversation in a space that tends to be very wealthy, tends to be white, and really beyond the reach of people of a certain income. And how does that feel like? Do you feel like maybe our country's catching up to a conversation you were already having, or do you feel like it's an important conversation to be having, or is it simply one you just have, so you put it up all the time?
I think that the idea of the identity of a practitioner is way more one-dimensional than what my life just is. And so I'm not, like, trying to bring up hot topics. I'm just like, this is what's good in this corner of the woods. And, like, a lot of people don't know what's going on in my corner of the woods. They don't even think, because, and this is going into kind of a deeper place, but I think that, like, in a lot of ways, people don't respect Black women in particular, specifically Black queer women. And I think that there's a tendency to just kind of make assumptions about what it is that is important to us, or like what could be going on. And so I think that's part of why the things that I say seem like, wow, this is, I really wasn't thinking about this, because to me it's just like, this is just how the world is. And I think that it says a lot that so many people are surprised by how the world is. But this is the other thing. I don't think anybody's really surprised. And what I'm hearing more often than not is that everyone wishes that they could say the things that I'm saying. And I'm like, if that's the case, then why are you not saying it? What is it? What is the fear? Where does that fear come from? And that, to me, is like a way more interesting conversation than the actual topics. Because I feel like that's just kind of, everyone's going to have their perspective. Did that all make sense?
Totally. I mean, do you guys all relate to that? I think that we all do. And I feel that too, right? That those conversations, like, I have safe spaces to have certain kinds of conversations that I won't broach in other areas of my life, race being one of them, and that you are sort of, I don't know, egalitarian about it. You are just universal around those conversations. They're happening, and you put them out there over and over again. And I'm with you on that conversation of, like, what's the fear that holds any of us back from saying something that we know to be true?
I am definitely very selective with my language, though, in a way that I am not when I am not talking. Like, in my mind, my social media is just like a journal, and so I'm just writing down things that I think. But I'm finally clued into the fact that there are people other than me looking at it, and as a result, it's like, I think it's important to think about the way that it's being said, not because I want to change how I feel about it, or like make sure that it's like comfortable for other people, but so that other people will be receptive to ideas that are not immediately going to be comfortable for them, especially if the idea is based around colonialism, or it's based around, like, you know, in like privilege and privilege that can't be explained any other way than for what it is. And because I think that if you ask the right question later, then I guess we'll get there.
I'm like,
we're not there yet.
What's the right question? Yeah, I mean, I think it's a conversation that's an interesting conversation that is happening in lots of different places, and you have it in a particular area, venue, and it's a fascinating one. You know, I love that I can click on anything that you've posted, and I feel like there's always a really interesting conversation, rich conversation that's happening with you and with followers and things like that. But even what you say itself in that little chunk is so rich, and I know for myself it's very inspiring, in addition to all the imagery you put out there and the conversations that you're having. But it's the conversation, I think, that's coming out of it that has made such a difference, I feel like, for others in this room as well as for myself.
It's so interesting to hear you talk about it, though, because I'm really not trying to do any of that. I'm just, like, trying. I'm not. Like, I think that everyone should be honest about their experience on this planet. I think the problem is that we're not being honest enough about it, and that there are a lot of people who just feel like they're, you know, kind of in shell, outer shells, and not actually engaging with what's going on inside of that shell. And I feel like I don't want for it to be a voyeuristic act of watching someone else, like, be inside of their shell or trying to shed their shell. And I feel like that's kind of where the conflict lies for me, where, you know, like, the being watched aspect of it, you know? And then, like, is this making the right impact, or is it just like a girl in a cage dancing? This is the other side of it, right? It's all fun and games when it's pictures on Instagram. There's real...
Well, I would actually frame it a little differently in that I don't think it's necessarily... I know for me, and I'm sure for other people, it's not just like a watching kind of a deal, that in seeing what you do, it's an observation on self for how we can shift and change what we do. Because everyone's working on something, right?
Exactly.
I mean, I'm working on multiple things always at any given time. And so this is an area where I think for you, it's like you're having a conversation for you. You have worked through this one. And so it creates inspiration. And I think that's awesome.
It's also a wild thing, though, when you, I was talking about this a little bit earlier, how in having a really deep yoga practice, like a yoga practice that is just kind of the only thing, it's, I feel awkward for the other people in my life that I care about, because I care about this so much, not just like, not the teaching aspect of it even as much as just the inward search, because it is, ultimately can become a very selfish act, and I find myself like, just in this place of trying to understand it. And at the same time, it's being shown on social media, like that is really what it's like. And I think that for me, it's very strange to be in this place of like hearing any kind of positive thing about it, because I think that it slips into that egotistical place, which is, as a practitioner, you're always trying to walk away from that. And then that's being shown to other people as like, oh, this is what yoga is, you know? It's this girl who's on tour across the country and has a book, and, you know, and I think that that kind of behavior is really encouraged in our current yoga, in the modern yoga world. I think it's totally normal to act that way. It's unquestioned because we live in a materialistic world. And I don't know. I mean, I think that these are the kind of the conflicts that I wish were happening on a larger scale as well, because when you talk about like brands and then what, then the real reason that we want for the yoga community to expand, I feel like that's where I really want to see everybody kind of directing the conversation, instead of like, I don't know, is this too, I feel like it's dark, but like I'm into it because I'm into that thing, into that stuff, but like I also feel like, you know,
I mean, that's the yoga practice, right? That you could look at the light and the dark. And I would say, for those of you guys who haven't read her book or haven't gotten it yet, that it actually, you do a really great job of diving into the stuff that she has had to, you've had to work through in your life, right? And that she actually has really cool sequences related to it, like the one that really made me laugh for a couple. Well, there's the beauty pageant one. So she talks about being in a beauty pageant. How old were you?
I was 11 and 12.
11 and 12. And so that turned into a sequence she calls, I Want to Stand Strong. Which is cool. So there's actually a sequence related to that. And then she also talks about an experience of being arrested for drunk driving, which turns into a sequence, I need to chill the F out. Right? And so that you really relate what it is, the practice, like the true practice of working through whatever it is you're going on in your life into yoga, which is ultimately really what the practice is about. So I would say that the book really gets into a lot of this space, which is cool.
That was really important to me, because I feel like the reason that the teachers who have had the biggest impact on me did so because they were really honest about themselves. And not in like a TMI kind of way, like I know too much about you, but in a way where it's okay to accept the times when you've slipped and accept the times when you've fallen and smashed your face in. And I think that ultimately that is why people really come and are enamored of this practice, because it is so beautiful to finally come to terms with the shit that has just plagued you your whole life, whether it's an injury, whether it's a loss early on, whether it's a drinking problem, that it's because you are in this constant state of healing and in a state of recovery that that's why it's so powerful, and that it's not so powerful because of asana. Asana is dope. I mean, I'm not saying it's not, but it's just, it's not all there is, and I think it is ultimately going to be the thing that makes you want to come back, like, on the surface, and so it's important to focus on it, but I also wanted to give a space for people to be okay with things that maybe they've been taught to not be okay with, because there's so many things that we don't move past and that we don't even acknowledge that they're the, it's the, you know, you could be practicing yoga for years, decades, and not ever get to a place where you're really, like, doing anything other than trying to copy the other people who are in the room.
It's true. It is really true, right? That practice is an internal one, and we practice it, and it can look really external, right? It can look really external, but it's actually a really internal one. So what would you say for the people then who maybe practice or like a little scared of practicing? There's something about practice and they're here because you have inspired them to somehow think, maybe I should do yoga. There's something to that yoga thing. Like, what would you tell them?
Just thinking, after I just was like, oh man, it's so dark and deep, and now
they're
like,
don't do yoga.
Fuck, man, I thought somebody told me this was gonna be fun. Well, so this is the thing. I think that a lot of times we expect immediate gratification, and so when someone says yoga's awesome, and then they're like, here's this fat girl doing it, so you're like, cool, I must be able to do it, and then you go and you're like, that was hard as fuck. So I feel like there's a feeling when it's hard as fuck to be like, I shouldn't have even come. It wasn't even worth it to try. I'm not good enough. And the reality is that you're not going to know what you're doing initially. Nobody does. And ultimately, you should never really be to a place of thinking you know too much, because that means you're going to fall on your face. So if you are okay with that, then what's the next thing that you're afraid of? Are you afraid of what other people are going to think? So this is like, I think, the most, who in here is afraid, has not tried yoga before, or who has been before, and was maybe intimidated by the other people who were in the room, or you felt uncomfortable, or felt like you shouldn't have been there yet, see, right? So I feel like that fear of other people is a really interesting building to work on, because that's something that is not just in yoga, that's all the time kind of thing. And we, as a society, I talk about in the book how we're so obsessed with complete strangers and totally give no value to our own opinions. And that shit is wild to me, because you're like in this place, right? Y'all know, but it's like you will be so inclined to, like, you could feel like you look great and everything is awesome, and then it's just one bad look from a stranger and then it's all gone. And I think that that's something that you should, or we should all, and present company included, I still do this, and it's something that I'm, like, actively, I think the people see me and they're like, she's got it all together, you know? Like, you must feel great in every environment and never question anything. But, like, you're going to go into yoga classes and have people are going to be looking at you, regardless of, it's not just larger body people. Everybody is going to have somebody in a class at some point who's looking at you cockeyed. And the reason that they're looking at you like that is because that's how they're looking at themselves. We don't acknowledge that, like, everybody has this shit, so that we're all in, like, a Mexican standoff with one another about nothing, you know? And I think that if you are fearful in that way, coming from somebody who has been fearful in that way, it's very helpful to assess that conversation for yourself and then see where you are on the other side of it. And I don't know what that's going to mean for you, because I'm also not going to sit here and be like, it's so easy, you know? I mean, just stop caring what people think. Just go to that one class. I mean, it's not that hard. Like, I don't know your life. I don't know what's happened to you, but I do know that you need to assess that. And also, yoga is literally not about anything other than breathing. And if you can do that, you can do this. Even if you can't get out of a bed, if you can do that, you can do this. So I feel like if you know that and you know the other checkpoints, then you should just see where you are on the other side of it. And then just go. And also, I emphasize the home practice a lot. I think it's really important, regardless of how many classes you go to, because I think that it's important to have a space where you always feel safe, where you can practice. And your home doesn't necessarily mean like the house that you are in. It just means a place that is home for you. And that place could change depending on where you are on the planet, but it is still that thing that belongs to you. And so often we think that our asana practices specifically belong to other people as well, that it belongs to your teacher, that it belongs to the person on the mat next to you, and that their opinions on it are just as important as yours. But truly, it is an experience of the self, through the self, to the self, not any other self. So if you can get into that place of wanting to pursue that journey at home to some degree, it can make such a difference, especially if you are just starting out. Did that answer your question?
Yes, okay. It did. Well, I'd love to open it up to the audience for questions you guys have for Jessamine. Anyone, you can raise your hand, and then we'll repeat the question. Who is so bold?
Don't
be shy.
Oh,
there's one in the back.
Absolutely. I started practicing yoga. Oh, the question was, how did I get to do this, basically? Like, how did I start practicing yoga? That's basically the question? Cool. Dope. So I was in graduate school, and I was studying nonprofit arts management. And I'd worked in a lot of different arts organizations, but I had gotten to a place in my academic program where I just felt like everybody was elitist as fuck. This is really common in like upper academia in the arts, specifically like classical arts. It's just a lot of people with their heads up their asses, and I was like, I feel like that is what I'm becoming as a person with my head up my ass, I have so little connection with what I'm doing. I'm not emotionally connected to this at all. And I had also been, my high school girlfriend and I were breaking up, and we'd been together for like all through high school, like the end of high school and college and graduate school. And so it's like, it feels like the end of the world, you know, like your whole identity is wrapped up in it. And one of my classmates was like really into Bikram yoga at the time. And if you've never tried Bikram yoga, it's a style of hot yoga that is performed in a room that's about 104 degrees. And it has a beautiful purifying effect. And as a result, it can create like kind of a culty experience for the people who are really into it. And I say that in the most loving way. I have a lot of love for that. But, you know, it's kind of culty. So she's like, it's very like they drank the Kool-Aid. So she's like, oh my God, you're going to love it. Bikram yoga, it's amazing. It's just going to change your life. And I was like, I'm not doing that, because I had actually tried it once when I was in high school. And so backtrack. This is the first story that I tell in the book. My aunt was really into Bikram yoga when I was 16, and she had also drunk the Kool-Aid. She was like, oh my God, you're going to love it. And at the time I was like, I mean, I'm fat, I'm 16, I got nothing better to do. Why not go to this hot yoga class? Sure. So I remember walking in, and it was like having a hot, damp washcloth trapped across your face. And it's like, it's 104 degrees. Like, this is no small temperature. And, like, I was just, like, I'm sweating from places that I didn't even know you could sweat. Like, I'm sweating from my eyebrows and my elbow creases and the backs of my knees. And we hadn't done anything. I'm just standing there. And that particular sequence, so Bikram is, it's a very specific sequence. This is like the fucking McDonald's of yoga, y'all. Like, you could go anywhere in the world and get this sequence. It's 26 poses, y'all know. It's 26 poses done two times, and it's bookended with these double rounds of pranayama breathing. And pranayama is so beautiful, so magnificent. And that pranayama, the first time that you do it, regardless of who you are, it's going to kick the shit out of you. Like, it is an intense experience. And I was like, how am I going to survive this if the breathing part is awful? And everyone is doing these, like, huge faces. Anyway, so I feel like I made it maybe a third of the way into the class. I'm probably being too generous, but I was like, I can't do this anymore. I cannot be in here. I think I'm going to die. And they tell you not to leave the room, but I was like, these people don't know me. I have to get out of here. And I walked out and immediately feel amazing because there's AC and it's great. And then I came back in, and then I learned why they tell you not to leave the room, because the temperature shift is so extreme that you will probably get nauseous. And I got extremely nauseous, and I was like, I'm not doing this. I left, and I was like, just, this is not for me. And so when my friend, cutting back to 7 years later, you see what I did there? We're telling two stories here. She said, do you want to go? And I was like, hell no. And she wore me down eventually, because they had a Groupon pass, and it was like, I mean, what do you got to lose? And I went, and I loved it. Everything about it was exactly the same. It was still hot as fuck. It was still hard as fuck. Everything about it was the same. But I didn't realize it. In my day-to-day life, when I was, like, going to class and hating myself and hating the work that I was doing and just feeling so miserable, and I didn't realize it, but in those experiences, I was not engaged. I was not connected at all to what was happening. It was just like, wake up, go to class, go to work, have the same conversations over and over again, go to sleep, wake up, do the same thing again. Not emotionally trying to break out of any boundaries, not trying to stretch my limits. And these asana were so monumentally difficult. Everything about it was, it seemed impossible. Like one of the first poses in the sequence is awkward pose. It's a variation on chair pose where you like rise up onto your tiptoes and bend your knees. And I would just like try to rise up on my toes and then immediately fall over. And I would get so pissed at myself. And I was very frequently the fattest person in the room, frequently the only person of color. And I would just feel, like, so out of place. Like, everybody's wearing, you know, they got their, like, in Bikram, everyone's got, like, hot clothes on. So, like, they're, like, perfect shorts and perfect bra tops. And I'm just wearing, like, my shorts from Walmart with holes in them and, like, my giant T-shirt. And I would just be looking at myself and, like, talking shit to myself and be like, you're not good enough. Like, why'd you even think that you could come? You can't do it, blah, blah, blah. And then I got to a place of thinking, yeah, but you could just try. You know, you could just try. Yeah, you might fall down. You're probably going to fall down. But you could just try. And then I would catch myself just trying and just actually focusing and doing the things that they said and not, like, being immediately like, I can't do this. And that shit was a game changer for me because I was not doing this. I was just like, if I thought that I couldn't complete a goal, I just wouldn't even try. Or, like, I would stop at the place where I thought that I could, where I thought I could complete it. And this is across all parts of life. And the thing about the yoga that that kind of gets lost is that it's not really about what's happening on your mat. It's about your application of it in a larger sense. And if I'm able to surprise myself and leap hurdles here on my mat, where the fuck else can I do this that I'm not doing it? And it gave me so much confidence. I was practicing a lot because I had a work study at that studio. And this is kind of a long story. Is that all right with y'all? I mean, I guess. Okay. I had this work study. I was practicing a lot. It gave me the confidence to leave grad school, which infuriated my parents and everybody else. And I moved to Durham, where I live now. And when I moved to Durham, I didn't have the money to practice in studios. We forget this, but practicing yoga in the West is extremely inaccessible to those without means, or even those with limited means. And I had no means. I had no job. I had no plan. And it was just like, I just got to get out of that situation that I was in. And during that time, I quit practicing for a couple of months. And a bunch of sad things happened. I only talk about one of them in the book, which is my aunt passing away, which was, I think that people don't really understand, like, how, you know what, I'm not even going to go there. The point is, my aunt passed away. It was very upsetting for me. Also around that same time, my then-girlfriend's brother passed away. My grandma passed away. It's just all this shit happened. And I found myself sliding back into this place of depression that I had been in before. And I'm prone to depression and anxiety, so it was not really like a surprise or anything. But I was like, what was helping before? Yoga? Okay, I just got to find a way to start doing this again, like something. So at home, I would practice 8 to 10 of the Bikram asana that I felt comfortable with, like, that I felt like I was okay enough with at home to do. And then I would occasionally like take other styles of classes. But when I started to really learn about vinyasa style yoga and learn about other types of asana, it just was like this insane rabbit hole that I am still in that there is this whole universe of ways to understand this world where I don't have to constantly be wishing for another moment or thinking about the future. And it's turned into something where it's bigger than just that thing that I do on my mat, like when I can. Now it is every single beat, every moment. And yeah, I hope that that answered your question because I feel like I've been answering it for 45 minutes. Oh, Lord, that's just... Absolutely, I do. And I also have to tell you that I saw you walking down the street earlier, and you reminded me of my friend Whitney so much, and I had so much love. And it's so weird that you just asked the question and that you're sitting in the front row of this. Because it wasn't even here, and that sounds really creepy now. Anyway, so, yes, because the thing is, it is not like a magic salve. It's not like, oh, I figured this out, bitch, and if you just go get it at the store or, like, if you just do it enough times, it's going to be good. No, it's like, so I have this practice that is kind of intense, and I have to do it literally every single time that I interact with people. And it's basically that Because, okay, sample situation. I'm at Whole Foods. I've been practicing yoga for a couple hours, and I'm hungry. It's time to eat. And so, like, I'm getting my food on my plate. And I see people looking at me, like, looking over, like, what kind of food's over there? She's pretty fat, you know. Like, I have all of these thoughts that are running through my head. Like, I know what they, because this is, you know, almost 3 decades of being in a fat body. And there is a lot, many layers of damage that can't just be cured overnight. And I have to consciously tell myself, it doesn't matter what other people think. You can eat what you want to eat. Do you not want to eat this food? Do you not? And then, like, I'll go, it's like I'm arguing with myself. Because that's really the issue, is that it's going on inside. And it's something that, it's like, because I don't know what other people are actually thinking. And there's no reason that I should even be concerned with that. But I've been conditioned to think that that's the way that I should be processing this world. And so it is an active, like, unplugging of that machine every single time. And I think it helps to be really, like, compassionate with yourself and understanding of the fact that, like, yeah, like, dude, I know that that's why you're feeling that way, but, like, it's okay. You can eat what you want to eat. You can wear what you want to wear. It's okay. It doesn't, yeah, that person is looking at you. They're looking at you because they don't understand. They're looking at you because they don't have the confidence to wear what you're wearing, and they don't understand how you could have that confidence. It's like literally explaining it to myself on a loop every single time. It is hard work to be in a state of confidence. And I think that it is really misunderstood as being easy, that it's like, oh, yeah. It's so great. No, it's like, that's why it looks like you don't care, because you're so damn busy trying to talk yourself down. So I feel like if you can get to a place of, like, having the conversation, really having the hard conversations with yourself and, like, just focusing on that, that's my only tip. Like, everyone says different things, like mantras and look in a mirror. That has just never worked for me. I'm not that kind of person. Respect to those who can. I hope that answered your question. I love this so much because I feel like I feel like I get asked this a lot. Like, Jessamyn, you know, I'm not fat and I'm not black, but, like, I love everybody and I want for everybody to feel good in my classes, girl. Like, what should I be doing? Like, what? I don't want people to feel this way. And I'm like, listen, I'm not doing anything that I don't think everyone else can do. And the reason I know this is because the teachers that I've had that I would really consider to be, like, the most body positive teachers, one of them, Michael Johnson in Asheville, North Carolina, if y'all are ever there, he is, like, a very beautiful spirit. He is a 6'3" white guy, like, very traditional looking, beautiful arm balance practice, like, very, he looks like the normal yogi. I don't know where that came from, but I just wanted to say it. Anyway, he looks like super normie, right? And he makes these spaces where he's being so honest with himself. And it's him being honest with himself. He is very gracious and compassionate, and he laughs at himself, and he is not too serious, and he doesn't make you feel like there's anything wrong with what you're doing. He is complimentary. He holds a space of love and compassion that is coming from a love and compassion that he has for himself. And that, I feel like, is really all that makes a body positive environment, is when, if it's in a yoga context, that the teacher is really just accepting themselves and being compassionate about themselves and accepting, because what's happening a lot is, like, trying to be fake or something, or, like, trying to pretend as though you're something different than who you actually are, and trying to act like your shit don't stink, or, like, you don't, like, your alignment has always been perfect, or, like, you've never tripped and fallen, or, like, that feeling makes the people who are in the room feel unsafe. And I think that the only reason that I'm, like, noticing that is because I have felt so unsafe and continue to feel unsafe in different environments. But I don't think that that's anything, like, I don't think that you have to even, like, know everything about, I do think it's important to know how to adjust circumstances for different bodies, different circumstances. But these are all things that can be learned. Like, you can read books about all these different things. And I think that's just a part of being a informed teacher. But I think that the real thing about just making people feel good is just, you know, being complimentary and being positive overall and not creating a competitive environment and making space for people to have whatever experience they need to have, whether that's, you know, crying on the mat by themselves, but they're not by themselves, they're in a room full of people, but they don't feel weird that that's happening, or the person who maybe their poses looks really different from other people, like letting them know, you look great, that looks good, good job, you know, because I can't tell you how many people have told me, you told me good job, and I haven't heard that in years. And that's a fucking problem. Like, and it's understandable because we don't live in a world where we're, like, actively complimenting one another. We always are looking for the faults. And I think it's, if you're in a position, it's so lucky to be in a position where you can focus on the positive and you can really shine a light for somebody, because that makes people grow further, I think, than trying to tamp it down. Thank you so much for asking about this. Okay. This is a whole chapter in the book, because no, I have not always worn my hair natural. And that is, oh my God, I'm so glad that you, just because, like, this is something that I think is all too common across lots of different groups, but specific to the Black female experience, it is just not talked about at all. And that is part of the issue. So, like, when I was 8, my mom locked both of our hair. She was so excited about it. It was like, gonna be the best thing. This is awesome. I didn't feel that way. The problem with internalized racism of yourself and being taught to hate the way that you look and going to schools with all the Black girls have relaxers and you're the only one that doesn't, is that fucks you in the head really bad. And, like, I hated my hair so much. There was, like, now everybody's got natural. Everybody's got locks. But in the mid-90s, that was not a thing. And, like, it was extremely rare. And there was so much, like, racism within the Black community talking about, like, what it meant to have natural hair. And long story short, this is much more detailed in the book, but my mom was really, really sick when, like, shortly thereafter, she got really sick. And while she was in the hospital, like, literally trying not to die, one of her friends, who had always hated my hair, was like, and hated just the whole thing, she was like, oh, do you want to, I can give you braids. And I was like, yes, bitch, what are we waiting for? Like, let's do it right now. God, like, what has to happen? And so, like, she cut off my locks and gave me a relaxer and then gave me crochet braids. And I wore my hair braided to some extent for 12 to 13 years after that. And, like, I would, on wash day, I would go, like, make sure that no one could see my hair, like, make sure it's wrapped up. Like, I was obsessive about it because I did not have any kind of internal dialogue with it. I would like to say that my mom was fucking pissed when she came out and, like, cut this person completely out of our lives. My mom still has beautiful locked hair that is, every time that I look at it, it's such a testament to everything that she has been through. And I think that it's an interesting journey for me to recognize all of that now. And that is such a huge part of why I wear my hair natural now. And that I specifically do not put any chemicals in it at all. And that I think wigs are so fun. It's amazing. There's all this amazing, it's like really cool technology now, but I cannot engage in that because, I mean, like, as an act of personal self-care, I cannot do it. It's like, and I have mad love to every woman of color who has any kind of thing extra happening with her hair, but in my own life, there are wounds that have to be healed, and it's no small act, and I think that that's something that, again, with, like, this experience not really being told that much, it's like, wow, that's how you felt about your hair. And I'm like, yeah, so when we were all in the same school, like, watching Bring It On together, and we were all having so much fun looking at Gabrielle Union and Kirsten Dunst, like, I was there with my natural hair, supposed to think that my hair is beautiful. I don't know, whatever. So, yeah, no, there's issues there.
Well, Jessamine, you're such a natural, gifted storyteller, and she is amazing. And Thank you for sharing yourself so openly in so many ways and in this conversation. And if you brought a book, she will sign it happily. She has a pen for you. And then you can also purchase books as well. Thank you, Jessamine, for being
here. Thank you, Nicole. Thank you, Seattle Public Library. Thank you, and you, and you, and you.
This podcast was presented by the Seattle Public Library and Foundation and made possible by your contributions to the Seattle Public Library Foundation. Thanks for listening.